A haze of smoke drifted across the South African veld. The sun burned red behind a ridge of low hills. A British patrol, dusty and on edge, approached a cluster of ruined farmsteads. A white flag fluttered limply from a scorched tree, symbol of surrender. But something was wrong. Too quiet. As they moved in, rifles cracked from the ridge. It wasn't surrender. It was an ambush. This was not a conventional war. It was the Boer War, and it would shake the British Empire to its core. Welcome to History Unpacked. If you enjoy the content, then consider subscribing. We post every week, and we hope you enjoy this episode. To understand the Boer Wars, you must first understand the land they were fought over. In the early 19th century, Dutch-speaking settlers known as Boers or farmers had trekked into the interior of South Africa to escape rule in the Cape Colony. These Boer trekkers, as they were called, endured brutal conditions to establish independent republics: the South African Republic, the Transvaal, and the Orange Free State. They viewed themselves as chosen people in a hostile land, shaped by Calvinist beliefs and a fierce commitment to self-determination. Meanwhile, Britain increasingly saw the region not as a backwater, but as a linchpin of imperial strategy. Control over South Africa meant control over key trade routes around the Cape of Good Hope, as well as influence over Central and Southern Africa. Then, everything changed. In 1867, diamonds were discovered near the Orange Free State. Suddenly, this rugged frontier became the focus of global attention. By the mid-1800s, the discovery of gold in the Witwatersrand region of Transvaal made it suddenly one of the richest territories on earth. Thousands of British settlers poured into the Boer Republics in search of this wealth. But they were not granted equal rights by the Boers. Tensions rose. The British demanded political reform. The Boers, under President Paul Kruger, refused. To them, these foreigners were invaders. Enter Cecil Rhodes, an imperialist mastermind and architect of British ambitions in Africa. In 1895, he helped organise the infamous Jameson Raid, a botched invasion meant to trigger a pro-British uprising in Transvaal. It failed catastrophically and only hardened Boer resolve. The Boers began preparing for war, and so did Britain. The countdown had begun, and when the war finally came, it wouldn't be the easy victory Britain expected. In December 1880, open rebellion broke out. The Boers rose against British attempts to annex the Transvaal and reassert control. The British, confident in their technological and military superiority, were taken by surprise. Boer forces mobilised quickly, and within weeks they controlled much of the Transvaal. The climactic battle came in February 1881 at Majuba Hill. British troops occupied the hilltop, believing that they had the advantage. But Boer marksmen scaled the slopes and launched a devastating attack. British lines collapsed, nearly 100 were killed, and the Boers suffered minimal losses. It was a humiliation. The British public was stunned. The defeat at Majuba became a symbol of imperial vulnerability. Prime Minister William Gladstone, already reluctant about colonial expansion, quickly moved for peace. The Convention of Pretoria gave the Boers self-government in the Transvaal, though nominally under British oversight. For the Boers, it was a triumph. For the Empire, it was a wound to pride that would fester for years. But the peace was uneasy. The British never forgot the sting of defeat, and when gold flooded the Transvaal economy, making it the engine of South Africa, the desire to bring the region fully under British control became irresistible. By 1899, the fragile peace had collapsed. President Paul Kruger, now a symbol of Boer resistance, issued an ultimatum. British troops must withdraw from the border. The British government refused, and on October 11, 1899, war erupted. The Boer strategy was swift and aggressive. Using mounted commandos, they laid siege to key towns, Ladysmith, Kimberley, and Mafeking. British garrisons found themselves cut off and under constant bombardment. The world watched in shock. Was the British Empire about to lose again? British reinforcements arrived in waves. By early 1900, over 180,000 troops had been sent, a staggering number. Command passed to Lord Roberts and his deputy, Lord Kitchener. They launched a brutal counteroffensive. In May, British troops captured Bloemfontein, the capital of the Orange Free State. Then Pretoria fell. The Boers' organized armies were scattered. But the war didn't end, it just transformed. Boer fighters now turned to guerrilla tactics. Using knowledge of the terrain and local support, they launched surprise attacks on supply lines, derailed trains, and vanished into the veld. Entire regions became ungovernable. In response, Britain escalated. Entire towns were cleared, farms were burned, water sources were poisoned. It was total war. And then, when that wasn't enough, the British turned to civilian internment. To break the back of the guerrilla campaign, the British initiated a scorched earth policy. Over 30,000 farms were destroyed. Entire villages were reduced to ash. The objective was to starve the Boers into submission by removing their support base. But it was the concentration camps that shocked the world. Initially seen as a way to house displaced civilians, these camps became death traps. Overcrowded, unsanitary, and woefully under-resourced, they were breeding grounds for disease. More than 100,000 Boer civilians were interned. Nearly 28,000 of them, mostly women and children, died. Emily Hobhouse, a British activist, visited the camps and reported their conditions to the public. Her accounts describe malnourished children, rampant typhoid, and systematic neglect. She became a national figure and forced Parliament to confront what had been hidden. But the British military refused to end the war. Kitchener constructed a network of blockhouses across the country, linked by barbed wire, to contain Boer movements. Commandos were hunted relentlessly. By 1902, Boer fighters were exhausted, their homes destroyed, their families suffering in camps, their hopes of victory gone. On May 31, 1902, the Treaty of Vereeniging was signed. The Boer republics were no more. The British Empire had won, but at what cost? Over 22,000 British soldiers were dead, approximately 30,000 Boer civilians had perished in camps, countless Africans caught between the two powers died unrecorded. The war left South Africa shattered. Yet just 8 years later, in 1910, the Union of South Africa was formed. It was a compromise state, a British dominion led by former Boer generals like Louis Botha and Jan Smuts. Afrikaner nationalism, however, did not disappear. It simmered. The shared suffering of the war became the foundation of a distinct Afrikaner identity. British rule might have prevailed militarily, but culturally, a new power was rising. Worse still, black South Africans who had served as scouts, labourers, and soldiers were excluded from the post-war political order. Their contributions were erased, their voices were silenced. The seeds of racial segregation and institutionalised white supremacy had been planted. By mid-century, they would bloom into apartheid. The Boer Wars were not just colonial sideshows, they were crucibles in which the modern South African state was forged, in fire, in blood, and in bitterness. And though the rifles had long since fallen silent, the legacy of those wars continues to shape the country today.